I'm Karen Garrison, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982. And that doesn't make me a miracle. It makes Alcoholics Anonymous a miracle. And my home group is the Pacific Group in West Los Angeles, California, a group that I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And if you're not proud, I suggest that you get another home group is what I suggest that you do. And I want to thank the committee for inviting me to come out here tonight and share my life with you. This is an honor and a privilege, and it's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. And I want to thank Nancy and the committee again. These people have just done one hell of a job, I'll tell you, and they really deserve a round of applause here. I want to thank Kathleen. I sponsor Kathleen for picking me up from the airport and bringing me down here. And Maggie, another girl I sponsored from Philadelphia, who is from from Fresno, California, who just made the change and moved out here. And my grandbaby, Katie, over there, who read for us tonight, too. And this is a big honor for me to be on the stage with these people. I just love them, and I'm so glad that we're all together up here tonight. And, you know, like I said, you know, if you're new in this room tonight, I welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope that you stay. And, you know, I suggest strongly that you get a sponsor tonight, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and that you get busy and do what everybody else is doing around here, and you're going to stay sober as I've stayed sober for 12 years, and people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever opened my big mouth, and one thing is to talk to my sponsor, and Clancy sends you his love and very best wishes tonight. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I didn't get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska, which is just a terrible place to get sober, if you want to know the truth. And I wasn't doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud of it as I stand up here tonight, I got to tell you. And thank God for the old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous, because somebody loved me enough to give me my current sponsor. And I got to tell you that my life has been nothing but totally, completely turned around as a result of that. And I talked to Clancy. Clancy's in Australia with the kangaroos, as he should be, I guess, you know, this week. And I talked to him Thursday, and I said, what do you want me to talk about in Maryland? He said, oh, quit trying to be cute. Get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They have this program already. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And you talk directly to those new people who are the life and blood of AA. And I believe that as I stand here tonight, and I welcome you, and I hope that you stay. And then I think I did, without a doubt, the most important thing that I can ever do. And that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life tonight, you guys. It did not used to be that way for me, I can guarantee it. I come from an alcoholic hell. I cannot even describe it, it was so bad. And, you know, my life is real good today, and sometimes I forget how bad it was. And I can tell you, the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. I had an alcoholic hepatitis. I had a liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to know what it is, because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can tell you that. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. I literally could not believe what was going on in front of my face. I'd lost my children. I'd lost my husband twice, although I didn't really care about that, I want you to know. I'd lost my car. I'd lost my house. I'd destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody. And I was clearly dying from alcoholism. And then I lost the one thing that brought me to my knees in this disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. And that absolutely devastated me, but did not stop me from drinking. And there's a reason for that, because I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I will learn to control and enjoy my drinking. Our book says the persistent evolution is astonishing. Many of us pursued in the gates of insanity and death. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I was in the gates of insanity the day I got sober and almost into my coffin. And I'm most gratefully standing here 12 years sober tonight, because I really should be dead. And that is just a fact indeed. I've been told that professionally and on and on and on. You know, I'll tell you, I absolutely love Cliff Roach. You're going to hear, sorry to break your anonymity, Cliff, but, you know, Cliff's from California. He's one of my heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you haven't heard this guy speak, you are in for one hell of a treat tomorrow night, I got to tell you. And if you were going to come to me, and I suggest strongly that you come and stuff. And we have a great lineup of speakers, and I thoroughly enjoy being here with all of them. I've heard about half of them already, and they've really, really been good and stuff. And the one thing I love about this conference so far, that it's nothing but pure AA from what I can see. And I love that, let me tell you. And I go to a lot of places and do a lot of speaking, you guys, and I hear a lot of crap in Alcoholics Anonymous sometimes, and I haven't heard that here this weekend, and I appreciate that, and I want to thank you for that. So it's a pleasure to be here, and so on and so forth. And I got to tell you that my life did not start out in Skid Row, I got to tell you guys. I come from a lovely, lovely home in Nebraska, and I want you to know that, and my mother wants you to know it too, I'll guarantee you that. I had a beautiful, sophisticated, elegant mother that died a year ago in March, and I miss my mom so much I can't begin to tell you guys. And like we say in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was current with my mom. I'd made my amends to her many, many years ago, and we had a beautiful relationship the last 10 years of her life. And I got to tell you that I am so grateful that I've done that, because I know people that have not done that, and their parents died and stuff. And my mom was always so proud her daughter was 10 years sober in AA, I got to tell you. And although she basically knew nothing about it, she didn't really want to hear about it, if you want to know the truth. And whenever I was going to speak anywhere, she'd always say to me, "Why do you have to get up there and tell those people all that stuff about you? They're not going to like you." And I'd always say, "Mom, the rottener you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you." And she'd say, "Well, I don't understand that." And I'd say, "Well, you don't have to understand it, Mom." And she'd say, "And don't tell those people that you're afraid, because they don't like people that are afraid." And I'd always say, "Mom, the more afraid you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you." And one more time, she'd say, "I don't get it." And why would she get it, you guys? She wasn't an alcoholic. And then she'd always end up by saying to me, and I'd love to hear this, and I'd prod into it and give an opportunity. She'd always end up by saying to me, "I'm going to tell you something, young lady. You come from good stock, and we don't air our dirty laundry in public." And I'd always say, "Mom, it's not dirty anymore." And she didn't understand that either. Anyway, I miss her terribly, you guys. And I talk to my mom every single day, because I know that my mom spiritually is still here with me and stuff. And I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people that stand at AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my father was an alcoholic, you guys, and I love my dad very, very much. And my dad died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And, you know, I would give anything in the world if my father were alive tonight, because we would have one hell of a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Rah-Rah in high school and homecoming queen and cheerleader, all that kind of crap, and made straight A's and never cracked a book, and I made straight F's and never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister's a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she was a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, Texas, and just retired here recently. Now she's teaching school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you, it is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love my sister very, very much today, and I recently found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who's a pilot in the Navy in Spain, who got home from Operation Desert Storm about a year and a half ago, who was in that first attack over there, and I am so grateful that war is over with. You have no idea. Neither one of these people are alcoholic. I have another sister who's married to the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of one hell of a bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome in their homes today, and I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, if you want to know the truth. They're highly successful people, and they bore me to tears, I got to tell you. I have a couple kids who are 33 and 34 years old, and I know I certainly don't look old enough to have kids at age, but by God, I am. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, if you want to know the truth. You know, I love my kids very, very much. Please don't get me wrong, but they are indeed a couple of jerks. And my oldest son's an alcoholic, and I know our book says we don't call other people an alcoholic, but I'll call him an alcoholic. I want to call him an alcoholic because he is an alcoholic. And he got picked up for his number 9 drunk driving charge last year, and one more time he's gotten out of it. It never ceases to amaze me the crap that we get away with. And I know I'm the last person in the world that can help this child. I can just keep my mouth shut and be an example to him, and that's what I try and do. I have another son who's not an alcoholic. He's not a drug addict or anything like that. He's just goofy is what he is. And I love to tell this story because it shows you precisely how my life goes. I got the strangest phone call from this son of mine about 8 years ago in L.A., and he said, "Mom, I'm getting married tomorrow." And I thought, getting married tomorrow? It was a surprise to me that anybody would even have him, if you want to know the truth. And I said, "Jeff, why do you call me the day before the wedding? Expect me to come back to Nebraska?" I said, "The Pope's in L.A. I doubt if I even get a flight out of here." And he said, "Mom, I don't expect you to come. It's going to be a tiny little wedding. Don't worry about coming." Well, you know, you don't tell people like me that stuff. I wanted to be there, and I was right about that. I couldn't get a flight out of L.A. The planes were just jammed and stuff, and I was just in a twit, you have no idea. And I talked to my sponsor about it, and this is the kind of loving direction I get from my AA sponsor. He said, "Well, what the hell are you going to do? Walk? If you can't go, you can't go. Now shut up about it. I don't want to hear another word about it." And I did. And I talked to my mom the day after the wedding. I said, "How'd the wedding go, Mom?" And she said, "It was very lovely, but who was that little girl with them?" And I said, "What little girl?" And she said, "Well, apparently Jeff's got a 4-year-old daughter that you don't know anything about, and I suggest you call your son and talk to him about it." And I need to tell you guys that I was more than happy to do that. Make no mistake about that. And I called Nebraska, and I said, "Jeff, how'd the wedding go?" He said, "It was very nice, Mom." And I said, "Who is that little girl with you guys?" And he said, "Mom, that's my daughter." And I said, "Why didn't you tell me that I had a grandbaby?" I was so upset with him. Not because I had a grandbaby, because I didn't know about it. He said, "Mom, I was afraid you'd get drunk." And I thought, get drunk? I wouldn't have gotten drunk. At least I don't think I would have. And I was on the first thing smoking out of Los Angeles, California, to get home and meet my little granddaughter. And I got to tell you guys that this child is the icing on the cake. She is the apple of my eye. Her name is Brandy, and doesn't doesn't that just figure? And she walked up to me at the airport, and she said, "Are you my grandma?" And I said, "Well, yes, I am." And she said, "Well, you know, you're my favorite grandma. And see, that's what I want to hear. That's the stuff I strive for." And I said, "Brandy, why do you say that? You don't even know me." And she said, "Because you wear ribbons in your hair, and grandmas don't wear ribbons in their hair." And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard, but I'll take whatever I can get here. And I flew her out to California about 6 years ago to give me a cake at my number, 5 years ago, to give me a cake at my number 7th, 8th birthday. And she flew out from Nebraska by herself, and I thought she'd be terrified to be on that airplane by herself, but I was wrong about that. She got off that plane like she owned it after sitting in the cockpit with the pilot the whole trip, and I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble because this little girl never shuts her mouth for 2 minutes, you guys, and I'm not used to being around little kids, and they drive me crazy real quick. And I said, "Brandy, do you ever be quiet? You're giving me a headache." And she said, "Grandma, I have a lot to say, and if you don't like it, take some aspirin," is what she said to me. I think that we have a prospective member of AA on our hands, or I hope I'm wrong about that. I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska almost 5 years ago in January, and I looked at my second grandchild, a beautiful baby boy that was born to my son and his wife, and I got to tell you guys that tears of gratitude rolled down my cheeks because I should not have been standing there. And I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 4 years ago in January, and I looked at my third grandbaby, another beautiful baby boy that was born to my son and his wife, and one more time the tears were rolling. And I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 3 years ago, and I took my fourth grandchild, another beautiful baby boy that was born to an alcoholic son of mine and his wife, and one more time the tears were rolling. Things with my family are very, very good today. It is only a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can assure you, and it took a long time for it to happen. You guys, you know, I have had one hell of a couple past months, and I want to talk a little bit about that tonight. I sponsor a little girl in Orange County, California, whose ex-husband died as a direct result of a heroin overdose. You know, about 6 weeks ago, I sponsored another girl in Iowa whose dad blew his brains out as a direct result of alcoholism and drug abuse. You know, I've just been on and on and on with this disasters happening with the people I sponsor. And last week, a girl I sponsored in Chicago shot and killed her. I mean, knifed her husband to death is what she did, 8 years sober, and he was beating her up and stuff. And it's just been a hideous nightmare with the people I sponsor. These people are all doing good up here tonight. I got an invitation to go to Russia, and I've just been up and down for the last 2 months. And so it was a pleasure to get out of Los Angeles, especially what's going on out there now, I can tell you. It's just crazy out there tonight. And I've been watching the news, and what a tragedy that's been. I absolutely love that man. But it has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. I realize that. And I need to get on with my talk here. You know, I'll tell you guys, when I was growing up, I was a disruptive jerk is what I was. Always in trouble. I was always getting kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I literally hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys, but I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one, and I hope it was my last one. But I remember what alcohol did for me from the very beginning. It made me feel like I belonged, and I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank at any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, and I honor that. I identify myself as an alcoholic from this podium. I used a lot of drugs, too. I need to make that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. And, you know, when I was growing up in Lincoln, Nebraska, there just wasn't a lot of drugs on the street. But I'll guarantee I found every single one of those drugs. And, you know, there was some marijuana and speed and stuff. And today, if you get caught for possession of marijuana, you get a ticket. Big deal. When I was growing up, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me. Nothing scared me. I didn't think I wasn't supposed to be doing. And I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here, that if you pat me on the head, my pants fall off is what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name it about them, I love it about them. They've been the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men, and there's a room full of them here tonight. I can just feel it, you know. I'm getting the age now. Girls with silver hair, men are starting to become very attractive to me, which opens up a whole new ball game, I got to tell you. Another 20 years of grief, I'm quite sure, down the line. And you know, those young ones are nice, but sooner or later, you got to talk to them, and they ain't got nothing to say I want to hear, I got to tell you. And I'm sure I have nothing to say they want to hear either, but no. I got to tell you guys a funny story. I was in Nashville, Tennessee about 2 years ago giving a talk, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee walked up to me afterwards, and she says to me, she says, "You're disgusting." And she wasn't kidding. She meant every word of it. And I was just devastated. You have no idea. And I said, "Excuse me?" And she said it again. And I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I got to tell you. And furthermore, if I wanted you to sponsor me, I'd phone to Nashville and asked you, you know." You know, I hear some women get this podium, and I wonder if they ever drank, you guys. I really do. I wonder if they didn't do all their drinking in one room and somebody didn't shoot it to them through the keyhole with an eyedropper. You know, I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share that freely in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I offend anybody in this room tonight, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life, I got to tell you. And besides that, my book tells me, and this is my favorite part of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, your dark past will be the greatest possession that you have. Then it goes on to say, because you can literally divert death and misery for others. And I found that to be very, very true in my sobriety, and I don't want to hear about it afterwards, I got to tell you that. But, you know, here I was, you know, growing up in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and I had to get married. And as it must be, I married an alcoholic. Don't most alcoholic women? I go for colorful, exciting men that beat the hell of you and all kinds of stuff. And he wasn't even a man, you guys. He was only 17 years old, and I was 16. I couldn't cook, I couldn't clean, I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew it, we had two babies to take care of, and I quick found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis, and used to come on and beat me up on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man hit a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing, if my father would ever hit my mom, she would have knocked him from here to the moon, I gotta tell you. And I grew to hate this guy very, very much, and I'm not blaming him for my disease, so please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story, and I need to share it. And somebody in that family had to get a job, and I found a job as a nurse's aide at the hospital there in Nebraska. I hadn't even finished junior high yet, for Christ's sakes, and the magic was put in Karen's life. I fell in love with nursing, and I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school, and I would love to become a registered nurse. That's what I would love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower, and I'm here to tell you tonight from this podium that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have any willpower as far as my disease goes, but when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years, and I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. I raised two little boys in the midst of all that. I did not drink. I did not use any drugs during this period of time. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand up here tonight and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and they told me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, and you're no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession, and I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people that I take care of, nor the people that I work with under ordinary circumstances. And what I have to tell you tonight is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you, the whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism, for Christ's sakes. I don't know anything about social drinking. I drank and I ran around with alcoholics. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in an operating room there in Nebraska, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in surgery. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position, and I drank and ran around with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard and they played hard. And I need to tell you that the incidence of alcoholism amongst the medical profession is tremendously high, and that'll do a lot for your security level if you're going to have surgery next week. That has to be very, very true. And I grew to love those people very, very much. And they're so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're to tell in the general way what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick about what my drinking was like. I love the horse races, too. I love everything I'm not supposed to be doing. And I've been in the horse races at Omaha, Nebraska with a couple of nurses that I worked with. And the girls told me, they said, "Karen, the horse race has been over with for 3 hours. We're all drunk. Let's go back to Lincoln." And I said, "Well, run along." I'd met 2 guys from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and these guys wanted to take me to a party, and by God, I was going. Like I said, you pat me on the head, and I'll follow you anywhere you want to go. And I really can't tell you much about the party, you know, the people that I was with. I just know that I woke up out of a blackout on Highway 2 by Palmyra, Nebraska, a town of about 200 people. And I found out something very interesting that night about Palmyra, Nebraska, that they take a dim view of naked women walking on their highways. I found that out. And here I was at 2 o'clock in the morning, walking stark naked down the highway, my high heels carrying my purse. And it was February in Nebraska. And it's a tad bit nippy out there in February in Nebraska to be doing that, I got to tell you. And tonight I know why duck's feathers freeze, I can tell you that. And I remember thinking to myself, what am I going to do? Well, what do? You walk is what you do. And of all the luck, the first person I ran into was a state pig. And, you know, in Nebraska, the cops travel by themselves. They don't have a partner. In California, they're a little bit smarter than that. And this guy stops his squad car, and he rolls down his window. He turns on his siren, and he looked at me, and he said, what are you doing? And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody say. It's quite obvious what I was doing. And he said, lady, you get in this squad car, and you sit down, and don't you touch me. One thing about a person like myself, every time I'm in trouble, I'll do one thing more to make it worse every single time. And I looked at this cop and I said, I'm not getting in your squad car because you might try and rape me. He said, lady, I wouldn't bet any money on it. You are absolutely disgusting is what you are. And I'm here to tell you guys that made me mad than anything that was going on to show you how sick I was. And he had to get a matron out from the Palmyra, Nebraska City Jail to come out there and get me. And that woman was not pleased, I'll guarantee you. They were very busy tonight at that downtown jail. They don't have time for this foolishness. And I went downtown, booked in that cop's raincoat. You know how cops keep raincoats in the trunks of their car for these occasions. And I went downtown, booked for indecent exposure, for assault and battery, for kicking in his windshield, for hitting her, for hitting him, all the delightful little antics that we pull as practicing alcoholics. And I will never forget how humiliating it was to be in that courtroom the very next morning when my brother-in-law, the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska — Lincoln's only 20 miles from Palmyra, Nebraska, I'm sorry to say — and he was in court down there that day. And he came up to me and he said, Karen, have you lost your marbles or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at my brother-in-law, and I was to say this to many, many people in my drinking career in many, many courtrooms. I said, oh, for Christ's sakes, Dennis, this could happen to anybody. You know, I know. And we all know better than that. And that cost me about $5,000 to get out of that, and I just shirked it off like it was no big deal. If you're going to drink, these things are going to happen occasionally, so what? I will never forget what it felt like to wake up in the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, one more time out of a blackout, one more time I've been to the horse races. You know, for a number of years, I thought the horse races were my problem. It certainly was not my drinking. And I'm one of these alcoholic females with a big mouth when I drink, and I have a big mouth in sobriety, but I can tell you the pain as a teacher here is getting a lot better. And I smarted up some guy at that horse racetrack, and he belted me right in the teeth is what he did. And a plastic surgeon was putting 18 stitches in my mouth. And I'll never forget what this doctor said to me. As long as I live, I'll never forget this. He said, Karen, we love you so much. You are such a good nurse and stuff. What is wrong with you? We think you're an alcoholic. Let's send you to a treatment center and get this drinking problem taken care of so you can get on with your life here. And you guys, I could not believe the audacity this man had that he would say that to me. And I said, just fix my lip and get the hell on my face. I'll drink if I want to drink. And that's exactly what I did. And the drunk driving charges and the bad checks, all the stuff that we eventually do. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged to. They kept dying from alcoholism. And I thought to myself, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father, and besides that, I need to get even with him for all the things that he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again, and I'm certainly not proud of that as I stand up here tonight. And, you know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is it's like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, if you will. I'm sure he feels the same way I do. As a matter of fact, I know he does. And I danced that man through three of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And I love to tell you this story I'm about ready to tell you. And my sponsor always tells me that is not funny and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. And I always say, okay, Clancy, I won't tell it anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and tell that those people see how sick you really were and apparently how sick you really still are. And I'm still sick and I still think it's funny and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I'm going to kill you the next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he did. And he came home drunk one night. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk? They want to take you to bed and stuff. And I happened to be sober that night for some reason. I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. If there's anything I can't stand, it's some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. I will say that when the shoe's on the other foot, though, it's fine with me. And that guy came home and indicated that to me. And I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed. Make no mistake about that. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, if you want to know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he sat up for hours, you guys, with his eyes pried open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis. And this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I got to tell you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story unless I tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. And I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse, you know. But anyway, I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. I remember thinking to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things that he's done to me? And that's one thing that we should never do is drink and think at the same time, I got to tell you. One or the other, but not both going at the same time. And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. This was about 18 years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. And super glue... And super glue was powerful stuff. You did not want to screw around with super glue. And I got that super glue out, and I read the directions on that super glue. And like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits... Excuse me. If this hits human skin, you better get it off within 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 5 minutes, is what it said. And I went over to this man, and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one place in this man did not have super glue, and I laughed about it, and I went to bed. Well, that's what you get for hitting people now. I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe. I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true. But I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can tell you that. And we had a telephone bar in our bedroom there in Lincoln, and he called the police, and the cops were out in front of our home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And, you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they do not see things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. In California, it wouldn't surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops are laughing, which led me to believe the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I stood there, and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands, for Christ's sake. And I said, what about my arm that he broke? It was always me, me, me. It was never about anything I did to anybody else. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you can't arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later, when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the host staff saw what Karen did. And they took me to jail, I might add. And it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get two surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper written about that at Creighton, and I'd always wanted a paper written about me, but not like this, I got to tell you. And, you know, if you're thinking about going to medical school there, you can read about it if you want to. And it was horrible. And I remember thinking to myself, sitting in that jail, I'm getting the hell out of this marriage, because when this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut. And he would have, too, I got to tell you. And the thought of that makes the hair on my neck stand straight up, I got to tell you. And God only knows I couldn't have that happen. And I divorced that man one more time. And I will tell you guys on the brighter side of things here tonight that Alcoholics Anonymous really does work. Because we have an amends step in this program. And my sponsor made me get on the airplane and fly to Sacramento, California and make amends to my ex-husband where he currently lives with his new wife and stuff. And I tried to tell Clancy, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, I don't care whether you're sorry or not. Get on that airplane and get there and do what I'm asking you to do. And maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I don't need to tell anybody in this room tonight that that guy kind of backs up when he sees me, I got to tell you. But we were able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to that man. And I can tell you guys, I walked away from that guy. I was free of what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I can tell you that the promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous started coming true in my life when I made those amends. So I know that this thing works. You just got to do it for it to work. At this time in my life, I got involved with the most bizarre man I've ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Lincoln, Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was starting to take Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. And it was beginning to be no more fun to be doing it, I got to tell you guys. You know, I loved to drink at one time, you guys. Drinking was a fun, fun thing for me. It would be a lie for me to stand up every night and say anything but that. But it turned into a nightmare for me that was so bad I cannot remember remember the fun. I have to remember the pain that it caused me. The very thought that I might drink again makes the hair on my neck stand straight up, I got to tell you. And, you know, I'm a nurse and I've studied alcoholism. And I knew all about it before I became one. And it shows me one more time tonight that self-knowledge does not mean a damn thing with this disease. It's action that counts. I love the name of this program this weekend, Into Action. This is not a program of thinking. It is a program of action, just like our book talks about. If self-knowledge would have gotten me sober, I'd have been sober many, many years ago, I got to tell you. And that's not what happened. And only the actions got me standing here 12 years sober, I got to tell you. And that's through sponsorship and God and all the rest of the stuff that we do in here. And I'm most grateful that as I stand up here tonight. And here I was getting myself into all kinds of trouble at work, oversleeping in the morning, calling in sick all the time, all the stuff that we eventually do. And the day came that hospital told me, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you. We cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore. Glue on husbands, drunk driving charges, all the stuff that you're doing. Everything that you do in Nebraska is in the paper, I'm sorry to say. And they knew my game, let me tell you. And they said, you're either going to a treatment center or you no longer have this job. Well, you guys, you know, you don't tell people like me that stuff. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I loved. I went to work at a nursing home there in Nebraska. And I'm about ready to tell you guys something I am not proud to discuss from any AA podium. It took me years in my sobriety before I would ever mention this. I found myself stealing drugs from that nursing home. I was stealing morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium. Anything I get my damn hands on. And if you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. And the day came to me, the people that ran that place came up to me and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are just weird is what you are. You know, you take good care of the patients, you're a good nurse and stuff, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange too if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange too. And I threw my narcotic keys at them and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that interview and I got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. I had to drink. I had to take drugs. I had no more choice in any of it. And I hated myself so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I would justify in my head, I don't mean to do this. I'm not a bad person. This is a temporary thing. This is the last time I'm ever going to do it. I really identify with the big book and the part that it talks about, that the alcoholic gets to a point where they know if they don't get that alcohol inside of them, that they're just going to die. And I use drugs at work because I couldn't drink. And you know, alcohol is my main problem here. You know, the drugs are all secondary and stuff. But I know exactly what that book talks about. When I finally picked up that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and I really did read it, I could not put it down. That is me they are talking about in that book. And I couldn't believe those people knew that stuff about me because I never shared it with anybody. And thank God. Thank God for Bill and Bob Smith, I got to tell you guys. And I'd be dead if it wasn't for those people. And so here I was, you know, doing the same things I was doing at that nursing home, stealing drugs, justifying all this stuff. And the day came for me when I got caught red-handed stealing some morphine from that hospital. And this has got to be the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they said, you give us your narcotic keys and you get out of this hospital and don't you ever walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My other two jobs should have done it too, as a matter of fact. And to make a long story short for you tonight, I lost my nursing license. I threw the one thing that I loved more than anything in the whole world right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. And to make a long story short and short for me here tonight, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I have traveled over the Midwest. I've prostituted myself. And I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have done and seen things that no woman should ever see or do. And I'm so sick in the head sometimes I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again. You know, and my sponsor assures me I'm still a very ill person to be thinking that kind of garbage. And, you know, I've been in nut houses, I've been in detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions. I cannot think of a thing that happened to me out on the streets as a practicing female alcoholic. And things happened to me that I would not repeat from an AA podium, I got to tell you. And I'm sure you had the general idea. If you don't, then, you know, you got to wake up to this disease because it is devastating for a woman to be on the streets. And anyway, 2 years went by for me. And there I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And I certainly had better things intended for myself than to be doing that, I got to tell you guys. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live. And I hope to God it was the last day of my drinking, although I really can't tell you much about it at all if you want to know the truth. But I remember thinking to myself, there was the Skid Row area had a Hilton Hotel adjacent to it. And I remember thinking, 2 years ago I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those people felt the same way when they arrived there. And, And like I said, I can't tell you much about it at all. I woke up in intensive care ward, the very hospital that I was born at, the very hospital that I worked at for 19 years. And I can tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. I don't know how many people in this room have been through withdrawal here tonight, but it is not a pleasant experience. And I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds the day I got sober. And I was coming off a quart of whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. And that is a lot of booze. That is a lot of pills. And I had a lot of dying to do. You know, they say that most alcohol withdrawal is over within 3 days. And perhaps that's true for some people. It certainly was not for me. It was going to be a long, long time before I was going to start feeling better. I was laying in that intensive care ward. I had tubes coming out of my belly. They were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going. And I just wanted to die is what I wanted to do. And obviously, I couldn't even do that right. And I used to scream at those nurses and say, give me some Librium, get me some Valium, get me something. This is absolutely inhumane that anybody should have to go with this kind of withdrawal. And they said, Karen, listen to us. You need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. I went to a fine, fine facility, you guys. They knew exactly what they were doing with alcoholics. And they went on to tell me, there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. And you need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. But let me tell you what these people did for me. And I will be forever grateful for this as long as I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. They got about 10 people from AA to come and sit with me. It was your original 12-step call, let me tell you. And these people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. I had somebody from AA with me around the clock. And I fell in love with these people, and I'll tell you why. There was nobody in my life the day I got sober. And my family wanted nothing to do with me. They'd been through it too many times. They were not going to go through it one more time. My mom, who I love very, very much, you guys, had to be hospitalized because of me and put on tranquilizers. I have not forgotten that by a long shot as I stand up here tonight. My mom did not deserve that, let me tell you. And so for the first time in a long tape, people were talking to me again. And these AA members would say things to me like, Karen, just keep breathing. That's all I got to do is breathe. And I'd say, when is this withdrawal going to stop? And they said, when it's time, that's when it's going to stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. And they couldn't give me a date. And they were absolutely accurate about that. When it's time, it's time. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked into that official treatment program at that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other. But apparently, I went to a fine one because all they talked about was AA there. And there's a lot of bad ones out there, you guys. And thank God I went to a good one, I got to tell you. And let me tell you what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I turned on you like you cannot even believe when you started telling me what to do. I needed you so desperately on day one. But 30 days later was a whole different ballgame. And I walked into group therapy the first time, and there was 14 men in that group. And they were all younger than I was, and they were for drunk driving charges and stuff like that. I couldn't identify with these people. I'd done those things years prior to my alcoholism. And this one guy looked at me, and he said, you think you're better than everybody else here, don't you? And I made a comment to this man that I was to pay for a long, long time in that treatment center. I said, yeah, you asshole, and you can put your name at the bottom of, at the top of the list. And I was in that treatment center in an inpatient 30-day program for 7 months, you guys. That's what happens when you do things like that. And I completed that inpatient 7-month program, and I went to an outpatient program, and I went to an evening care program, and I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I wasn't doing one thing the way that you teach people to do it in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I rapidly went through 19 sponsors in that town. And like I said earlier, I'm not proud of that at all, I got to tell you. And, you know, many, many wonderful people tried to help me, and I just would not listen to them for some reason. And you know, you can pull your crap around here just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right after the other. God love the mean old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous. They literally save people's lives by being like that, I got to tell you. And this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me out of an AA meeting one day, and he said, you stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA they don't need to read the book and they don't need a sponsor? He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. And he said, you stay away from the new people. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy. You're going to hear this man speaking. You're going to ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I heard all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. And I told this old-timer, I said, who the hell do you think you are that you're going to tell me he's going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go with us, Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And for Cliff Roach in here tonight, I paid that money back too, by the way. And I got to tell you guys that from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that Clancy literally, and I mean literally, put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous into my life. And my life has never been the same since that talk. And let me tell you why. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying with another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I knew it was wrong with me, and I knew what I needed to do about it. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in Karen Garrison's life. I never would have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me, I wouldn't have asked him. And I found my myself walking across that convention floor and asking that man to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazier than I ever thought of being. And I thought to myself, why'd he say that to me? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact that these old timers had called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked him if they brought me, if he would talk to me. And he said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And I was standing in my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like an angel. And he saw right through my crap, I got to tell you. And he said, Karen, I don't like to sponsor people on long distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you, because if I don't do it for you, you're probably going to go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good, because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me every day. I tell you not to call me every day. You're going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people. You're going to become an active Bible member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me. You're not going to defend your actions to me. And you're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about, we stood at the turning point. This is the day when my recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous began. And I said two words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. And I'll guarantee that I say it today, too. Respect's got to start for me somewhere. It might as well start with my sponsor in this program. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way. And I wound up by sponsoring 56 women in that town. And I'm not bragging about that. It's not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I grew to love those women very, very much. And I'll tell you why. Every one of those girls are still sober. And it's not because of me. It's because they're active, viable members of this program. And I just dearly love them. And they literally showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety, what to do and what not to do in this program. And I just love them dearly. And I see them every time I go home, and they're all doing well. They all have a different sponsor now, and they're all just thriving on this program. They've gotten married. They've gotten had babies and so on and so forth. And life has happened for them, as it should, I guess. And it's such a joy to see that. And, you know, one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. And I tried to tell Clancy, I cannot go through that kind of humiliation. He said, Karen, listen to me. Do what I tell you to do. Get up to the State Board of Nursing Nebraska and tell those people that you have been sober now, Alcoholics Anonymous for 2 years, that you'd like the option to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important thing I can say from this podium tonight. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I went up to that State Board of Nursing and asked them for my license back, and they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I got to tell you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I said, I'll do anything that you want me to do. And my sponsor encouraged me and told me, he said, if they tell you something, say yes, I'll do it. And I wanted to choke them is what I wanted to do, but I said yes, I would do everything that they asked me to do. And they went on to tell me, Karen, we've never done this before. We have never given anybody their license back in Nebraska. It's a pilot thing for you. You screw up and nobody's going to ever get their license back in this state. You want to talk about the heat being on you, let me tell you. But you guys, I was determined to get that nursing license back, and they gave me a shot. And I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you want to know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process. And through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the happiest days of my life occurred about 8 years ago, when one more time I was jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska. And what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home. You're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. No. I had absolutely nothing to do with it. You did that for me, and I am so grateful to you guys for that. And you know, I went out to California to visit a couple of times. I fell in love with Southern California AA, and I told my sponsor on the phone one day, I want to move to California. I want to belong to the Pacific Group. I want to live on that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people. I knew I'd feel like a glove, and I've not been wrong about that either. I want to work at UCLA in the operating room. I want to be on two of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. I want this, and I want that. And you guys, every single one of those things have come true for me, and those are all gifts from AA. I do not deserve any of it, but I intend to take it, let me tell you. And I want to share some stories with you guys tonight that are so special in my sobriety. I love to tell them. I love to relive them all over again. And they pertain basically to the two things that my sponsors taught me that have literally saved my life in this program. And the first thing he taught me is one day on the telephone, he asked me, he said, Karen, where are you at with your spiritual program? And I said, oh, Clancy, I don't believe in God. I can't do that stuff. And he went on to tell me, he said, in this book I have in front of me, it says clearly that you get a daily reprieve contingent on a spiritual maintenance of the power greater than yourself. And he said, young lady, you better start doing something in that area, because the day's going to come for you when I can't help you, AA can't help you, and you had better well have a God in your life, or you're going to be dead from the disease of alcoholism. And you guys, that's happened to me many, many times in my sobriety, and thank God I had a God by the time it happened. And one more time I said to my sponsor, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to get on your knees in the morning, I want you to get on your knees at night, and I want you to pray for God's will. Do not pray for things, pray for God's will and the power to carry that out. And you guys, I started doing that. And I didn't feel any connection with God. I felt like a fool doing it, if you want to know the truth. And I would tell my sponsor every day on the telephone, this is not working for me. Can I quit doing it? And he said, Karen, are you staying sober one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, you know that I am. He said, that's the point of the whole thing. Are you stupid or what? I wasn't playing with the full deck when I arrived here. It took me a long, long time to get these little simple things. And in 1985, I found myself in Montreal, Canada, at the World Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you guys haven't experienced a World Conference, you're about ready to see this all over again in San Diego in 1995. We are expecting 100,000 people at that conference. And I hope that we all get to go to it. I know that I'm going. I hope that you get to go to it. And it's a magnificent thing. It's one that none of us should ever miss. And I drove there from Nebraska with a couple of girls that I sponsored, and they didn't want to go to this thing, you guys. They said, we don't even want to go to it. And I said, well, you are going. I only had $200, and I couldn't afford to go by myself. And so you are going. And so we all went, and we had no place to stay. And but by God, we were going to that conference. If we had to sleep outside, we were going. And we got at the convention center. We found an apartment. She ran for the whole week for $100. I could not believe our good luck. And I found myself in a great big football stadium at that Friday night meeting. And there was 56,000 sober alcoholics in that football stadium. And I was in awe, in absolute awe of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I looked around myself, and everybody was up having a wonderful, wonderful time and stuff. And everybody was in a good mood, you guys. It was just fabulous. And they were down there on the football field, and they were practicing for a flag ceremony. And alcoholics from all over the world carrying their national flags. And my sponsor was down there helping them practice for that flag ceremony. And I know this all sounds real corny to the new people, but the longer I stay sober, the cornier I get for some reason. And I ran down to Tuck Clancy High, and he introduced me to people from all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys, I'm from Nebraska, and I was impressed, let me tell you. And I'm impressed today when I meet people from all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ran back up and joined my friends, and that flag ceremony started. And I will never forget this. As long as I live, I'll never forget this. When the United States of America's flag touched the turf of that stadium, I saw 56,000 sober people go absolutely crazy. And I looked around myself, and I did not see one dry eye in that football stadium. I saw those old-timers sitting around, all the new people and all the people in between. And they all seemed to be loving this program so very, very much. And I remember thinking to myself, what is wrong with me? Why can't I feel what these people are feeling? I, too, wanted to love this program, you guys, and I could not seem to achieve it somehow. And for the first time in my entire life, I got tears in my eyes. I did not try and stop. And for the first time, with any amount of sincerity whatsoever, I said, God, thank you for getting me here. Please help me to stay here. Please help me love this program as much as these people do. There it was, you guys. There it was. I had talked to God for the first time sincerely since I've been sober. And I'll tell you guys, it chills at least shot up and down my spine. And I can tell you that for one solid second, my world stopped. And I remember that woman who was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, who literally was dying from alcoholism. And here she was, 3.5 years sober. And I can tell you guys, in a foreign country, in a foreign land, I came to believe, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about, I came to believe in a power greater than myself by watching and being with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really believe the old adage, that we see when we're ready to see, we hear when we're ready to hear, and not before. And I also believe that the actions my sponsor gave me got me to that point. It's like, do it till you feel it. Just keep on keeping on. And you know, I'm so grateful that happened to me. I've talked to that God every day sincerely since, because I believe what my sponsor has taught me. I get a daily reprieve, and that's how I get it. And you guys, I work at UCLA in surgery. I have a magnificent job, but it's just a damn job is all it is. You know, my sponsor's also taught me that God and AA have got to be center core of my very existence. Not some man, not some job. It's God and AA. Everything else revolves around that. And I try to teach the people that I sponsor those same things too, and because all those things have come true in my life for me. And my sponsor's taught me one thing that has literally saved my life without any doubt. He's taught me, do what's in front of you and don't debate it. Just do what God gives you to do and quit arguing about it. And I wonder how many times in my life I've missed doing things that I was supposed to do. If I think long about it enough, it'll make me crazy. But anyway, about 5 years ago in Southern California, we had a terrible nursing crisis, and we were working our butts off, let me tell you. And I was always the first one to complain about it, I'm sorry to say. And, you know, we're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I was a bitch is what I was. And I'd worked 72 hours this one particular week, and I had the night off. I worked the night shift in surgery, and I had the night off, and I went to a meeting early in the evening. I went home, and I went to bed early. I was just exhausted. I was just whipped and stuff. And the phone rang at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was my boss. And my boss is from West Germany, and she makes Clancy look like a pussycat, I got to tell you. And she's probably the best nurse I've ever met before in my life, and one of these days when I grow up, I want to be just like her. And she called me, and she said, I've got 18 people sick over tonight, some flu bug or something. And she says, I need you to come over here and help me. I know that you work 72 hours. You're not on call. I really can't make you do that, but I need you to come to work. And I said, I am exhausted. I have been bled white, for Christ's sakes. And she hung up on me is what she did. And, you know, I was going to call my sponsor, but I don't want to talk to Clancy about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I just went to work, and I'm glad that I did, because the most precious thing happened to me. And I got over there, and we're going to do a liver transplant on a little girl that was about 3 years old. And I sent my orderly upstairs to get this little girl and bring her down to surgery. And we had a jet coming in from the East Coast to deliver for this child. We had some time to kill and stuff. And he called me in the back, and he said, come out front and get your patient. You're not going to believe all the people that are with this family. And I thought, well, that's nice that they have the support and stuff. I was so crabby, you guys. And I went out to get that little girl. And the first thing I noticed was about 75 people with that family. And it was highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning, I got to tell you, or any time of the day, actually, to have 75 people with somebody. And the first thing I noticed was the mother. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life. And the dad was good looking and stuff. And I looked down at my little patient. And I got to tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love at a level that I never, ever, ever dreamt possible for myself. And I looked into the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life. And this little girl was so sick, she couldn't even lift her head off the pillow. She was so sick. And she was dying from some strange liver thing. And in her arms, she had a little bear. And she was hanging on to that bear for dear life, I got to tell you. And I've been over and talked to her. And I said, oh, you brought your little bear down to surgery. And she tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, oh, you're both going to have one. She said, no, just the bear, you know. And we sent the family out to the waiting room. And this little child looked at me and she said, and that mom and dad were in absolute hysterics, I got to tell you guys. And this little girl looked at me and she said, why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. I can't stand it when my mommy cries. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous and what I've learned in this program, I was able to tell that little girl the truth. And I said, your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so much. And that seemed to settle her down a little bit and stuff. And we put that little child to sleep. And I got to tell you guys that 16-hour liver transplant did not go well. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss and stuff. And I have never seen an operating room team full of people pull together like we pulled together for that baby that night. And like 90 units of blood, and 16 hours later, she went up to her room with really not much hope at all, I got to tell you guys. And I was obsessed with this child, and I had to see her again. We have a rule at UCA. You may not get involved with these transplant patients. They wonder where the organs come from. We cannot see them after surgery because they're going to ask us, and it's best not to see them. Well, I don't need to tell anybody in this room tonight that I'm real good at breaking rules now, aren't I? And I thought, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing. I'm not going to talk to anybody. I was literally obsessed with this kid, I got to tell you. And I thought, I'm just going to go up and open her door and not talk to anybody. And that's exactly what I did. And when that little girl was 6 days post-op in that 16-hour liver transplant, I went up to her room. And I opened the door to that child's room. And you guys, I could not believe what was in front of my face. My God, the power of God. The power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she'd been up since her surgery. She was jumping up and down in her crib. She had her diapers hanging around her knees. She had a bear in one arm, and she put Band-Aids all over this bear. He had Band-Aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And in other hand, she had a baby bottle. And I just stood there and I just bawled, you guys. I just stood there and bawled. And that whole room full of people were in there. And something caught my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. Now, if you think I'm going to stay out of that room, you're just crazier than hell. I didn't care if I got fired. I was in that room like a flash. And I said to the mother, I said, whose book is that? And she said, well, that's my book. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so is my husband. And her sponsor was there, and his sponsor was there. And those 75 people, you guys, had driven 500 miles to be with this family. And I was impressed, let me tell you. And they showed me one more time what this thing is all about. It's about love and service, and that's all that it's about. And I asked the mother, I said, how long have you been sober? And she said, 5 years today. And I thought, oh, wow, her little girl up for the first time. What a fabulous, fabulous birthday present. And I walked over to this little child, and this little girl stopped dead in her tracks, and she looked at me, and she said, go away, I'm not sick anymore. I was standing there with my surgery clothes on, and it scared the hell out of her is what it did. And if I'd known I was going in the room, I certainly would have changed clothes and stuff. And I said, I didn't come up here to hurt you. I just came up here to see how you're doing. And she gave me her little bear, you guys. And she said, you take him home and take care of him. He's so sick he needs a nurse to take care of him. I know really what she wanted me to do is get the hell away from her is what she did. But I told the mother, I said, I can't take that child's bear home. My God, that bear went through this kid's liver transplant. You really need to keep it. Her whole surgery, you guys, we had that bear in a little plastic bag by her head and stuff. And we had a little head had Lynn on that. And I told the mother, I said, you really ought to keep this a memento. And she said, Karen, please take it. She wants you to have it. She's got 50 bears in this room. And she did indeed have 50 bears in that room. And I thought to myself, I need to reciprocate here. You know, what can I do? I obviously was not prepared for a birthday party. And I remembered something that was in my pocket. I was almost 8 years sober, you guys, when this happened. And I had a medallion for 5 years of sobriety in my pocket. If anybody's wondering why I have a medallion in my pocket at night, there's narcotic keys next to that medallion. And I don't mind telling anybody in this room that sometimes when I open that cupboard, my eyes light up like firecrackers, and I can grab onto that and remember where the hell I'm coming from here. And my sponsor would give me that medallion, and I could not seem to find the person that was special enough to give my five-year medallion to. And we say in Alcoholics Anonymous, you have got to give this thing away to keep it. You've got to give it away. I'm a selfish woman, I'm sorry to say, but I knew I found the right person to give my medallion to. And I gave it to her, and she said, oh, Karen, I can't take that. My God, Clancy gave you that. Please keep it. And I said, no, no, I want you to have it. And I really meant that, you guys. That is what you have done for me. And the nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake for the mother, and we celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. And I got to tell you guys, it was one of the most fabulous days of my entire life. And I would have missed all that. It left to my own devices, I got to tell you. And I called my sponsor on the telephone. I had never seen Clancy so excited in my life. He had about 50 cars in front of UCLA in about a half an hour. And I was so very, very proud, you guys. So very, very proud to take those people to my home group in Alcoholics Anonymous that night, the Pacific group. I will never forget those people as long as I live. There's been no more contact with them. It's got to be that way for many, many reasons. But I know that little girl is doing very, very well and stuff. And I thank God on a daily basis for putting that experience into my life, I got to tell you. I will never, ever forget it and stuff. And, you know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them, so that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, that I may forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walked me when nobody else would walk with me. You held my hand when nobody else would hold my hand. And you told me that you loved me. And I need you as desperately tonight as I need you in 1982. You've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up and all those things. And I don't do any of those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection, and that is this, that I love you more than anything in the whole world. And it's truly a story from an alcoholic hell I cannot even describe. I have truly been given, just like the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing and I'm going to sit down here. You know, if you're new in this room here tonight, whether you've heard chapter 5 or not, I do not know. I just know that chapter 5 says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, which begs the question, what is our path anyway? And I believe tonight, as I stand here, that our path is those 12 steps, those 12 traditions, one-on-one contact with other alcoholics, sponsorship, God, on and on and on. But I can tell you that the greatest part of my path is being able to stand here tonight in Maryland and tell you guys, I love you and thank you. And I will tell you that it has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row to where I stand tonight in Hagerstown, Maryland. And I think that but for the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me and thank you for my life.
On behalf of the committee, I'd like to present Karen with this gift as a token of our appreciation.
Thank you.
And we'll close with the Lord's Prayer for those who care to join us.